Welcome back to New World Next Week. I'm James Corbett of CorbettReport.com.
And I am James Evan Pilato of MediaMonarchy.com. This case could set a precedent impacting countless other builders and musicians. We have got that story, plus stop hiring humans. But first, they did. Republican Thomas Massey, who stood up to Trump, defeated in Kentucky primary, grabbing this from Al Jazeera. Yeah, all it took was, you know, millions from Zionist, from some mercenary no one seems to actually like or support. The Associated Press news agency called the race for Ed Gallrain, whose campaign was backed by Trump's endorsement, as well as millions of dollars from pro-Trump and, more importantly, pro-Israel political lobby groups. The contest, widely described as the most expensive House of Representatives primary in U.S. history because everything costs more, saw more than $32 million spent on advertising and offers the latest piece of evidence of Trump's hold over the Repug Party. It followed the primary defeat on Saturday, a few days prior, of another Trump critic, Senator Bill Cassidy of Louisiana, as well as for dissenting Republican state lawmakers in Indiana earlier this month. These are all the sort of primary elections here in the states, setting up who's going to be running for it in the fall. The big important 2026, you know, when the pendulum will swing back the other way from the party that's not in favor, as it seemingly always does. In the northern Kentucky city of Covington, Rob Barkley, a former Trump supporter who backed Massey, said the president's attacks had actually helped him push him further towards the congressman. He's on the Republican side, so he has a conservative mindset, Barkley told U.S. media after casting his ballot. But he's not as far right as Trump's leanings in his politics. Massey, who voted with Trump 90% of the time during the president's 2.0 term, framed the contest as a broader test of independence within the Republican Party. I'm not running against President Trump. Most of the people voting for me support Trump like I do, Massey said. The hated Secretary of War, Pete Hegseth, made a rare appearance in Massey's district the day before Election Day to campaign for Ed Gallrain. Federal law restricts government employees from engaging in partisan political activity while on duty, but Hegseth's office totally said he attended in a personal capacity and that no theft payer money was used. It's black budget. Trump later revealed that Hegseth's campaign appearance came just hours before the U.S. had expected to launch a new military assault on Iran, the war for Israel that they need congressional support for, although the operation was later postponed. Massey, first elected back in 2012, had long been one of Trump's most persistent Republican critics, and if you don't believe me, let's just take it from the tweet words of AIPAC. Ed Gallrain's victory in Kentucky and Clay Fuller's win in Georgia ensures two outspoken pro-Israel voices are positioned to fill seats previously held by outspoken detractors Thomas Massey and Marjorie Taylor Greene. Our community was proud to help pro-Israel candidates win these races. So, Mr. Lock 'em up, lock her up. He's only really achieved the success of getting rid of some of the half-okay Congress critters there were. And I saw this, and of course, it just seems pretty sus. Nobody showed up to Ed Gallrain's victory party. Apparently, there wasn't a single Kentucky state lawmaker at the event. Does this make sense? And then you look at the losing event for Thomas Massey, and it's packed like a rock show. Seems sus. Seems rigged AF, like maybe most elections do. Something about 10,000 votes in the middle of the night, Brandon style. So maybe, James, the positive side, now that Thomas Massey is not constrained by working for the state, maybe he can actually maybe accomplish more. I joke. We were joking in the chat. He'll have a podcast in 3, 2. Now, James, the question and what Thomas Massey had repeatedly said in relation to calling his opponent, you know, you have to do the concession call when you lose. He said he was going to call him up, but he couldn't find the number in Tel Aviv. How do you fight City Hall when City Hall's in Tel Aviv, James?
Hell, James, you can't even fight City Hall when City Hall is in El Rito. So, you know, good luck with that. But, you know, say it with me. If voting changed anything, they wouldn't let you do it. This is example number 7,258,369. But you know what they say. 7,258,370th times the charm, guys. Do it again. Two more years. 2028. And, of course, I did watch a bit of the concession speech in which, after he makes that joke about Gallrain in Tel Aviv, the people start chanting, 28, 28, what are you guys saying? You want me to run for Congress again? President, president, yay, yay, more hopium, put it right in my veins. We didn't vote hard enough this time, but we'll vote even harder and overcome the obvious rigging and election swinging that is done by these people who control the system that is there to control you. And you think you are going to vote someone in who is going to manage to do anything of substance in that system. We have seen if you go against the Epstein class, they will come down on you like a sack of hammers. If you try to put your vote against the biggest spending bill in history, nope, you're going down. If you attempt to even put the brakes on Israel's war of aggression against Iran, not in Trump's America, you don't. No, voting is not the solution here. But you know what? I say, let this stupid system fall. I hope that all those people who were chanting 28 president wake up tomorrow morning ashamed of themselves for having been duped yet again, just as they have been duped every single time in every selection cycle their entire lives, to arrive at this point where they now realize it was all a lie. I think there is a genuine revolutionary spirit that is rising. People are realizing that the ballot box is a slave suggestion box that is meant to placate you. And once people realize that, I think we will start to see real revolutionary energy. That, of course, does not mean that everything is going to turn out all right. Let some blood flow in the streets and everything will be better has not tended to work out in history. But at the very least, if you want something to change, I'm going to say it's probably not going to happen by voting even harder in 2028, guys.
I'd love to, again, the cliche is, oh, so you can change the system from the inside. And in my nearly 49 years, I've never seen that work out successfully. I suppose it could be true, but I've never seen it play out that way, James. Watch them. They'll try and do DeSantis Massey 28 and run against JD and DJ, and we'll see. And I would add, maybe vote against their propositions on all their elections. Oh, we want to build this and we want to steal money for that. No, 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 no. Vote no against all their propositions. Don't vote for any of their people. Just maybe write your name in. Hell, write my name in. That's how we get going on New World next week, episode 631. And perhaps that revolutionary energy might be found in our second story. Rage bait with a price tag. Stop hiring humans. Billboards spread across U.S. cities as AI startup Artisan sparks fury and death threats, which was well calculated. Grabbing this from IB Times again, everything we say, all our wild accusations, all sourced and cited down in the show notes. A San Francisco-based artificial intelligence startup, that's like the start of a horror movie, has plastered "Stop hiring humans," the quote, across billboards from California to New York City, the only places they want you to believe actually matter in this country. And the backlash, of course, has been anything but quiet, because everybody's mad about everything all the time. It's about trying to hopefully steer and direct that now righteous anger that's been stoked up. Artisan AI, which sells AI-powered virtual sales representatives, launched the campaign in October 2024 and has since expanded, of course, to Times Square and bus stops all across Manhattan, according to co-founder and CEO Jasper Carmichael Jack. The ads, which also carry slogans such as "Artisans won't complain about work-life balance" and "Artisans won't come into work hungover," were designed specifically, like most of culture is, to provoke you. It's rage bait with a price tag. Carmichael Jack has acknowledged the strategy openly, telling a repeater, "The biggest play with the campaign is not actually the people who see it from the streets. It's when people take pictures and repost and reshare it. That's when we go viral." The campaign, of course, not controversial by accident. Artisan's earlier marketing efforts used softer slogans such as "Be more productive," "Upskill with AI," "Fitter, happier, more productive." But they failed to gain widespread attention. That was always my favorite. The company then deliberately pivoted, as seemingly everything has, to shock value. Carmichael Jack decided that stoking people's fears about being replaced by AI would almost certainly hit a nerve, and it worked, at least by their own metrics. The campaign generated tens of millions of impressions, hundreds of news articles, and by Carmichael Jack's account, thousands of death threats. Again, in this culture, love, hate, whatever, the attention, it's all about the attention. James, I have made the claim over these last decade that Taylor Swift and Donald Trump are the greatest economic drivers in American 21st century life. Boo, I hate her. Oh, I love her. All good. They just stay sort of at that top. Fevered egos, I believe St. Hicks would call them. Carmichael Jack told a reporter the company spent less than $50,000 on placements across Manhattan, including Times Square. The earned media, free attention, like they give to their hated orange man, which has propped him up. The earned media value far exceeded that spend, with the company claiming hundreds of millions of online impressions from the New York rollout alone. And we have the link to their own blog, why we put stop hiring humans on billboards and what it actually means. And now, of course, you know, they're going to get the big New World Next Week boost. They're going to go, wow, man, look, our traffic went crazy. We will include a link about the attention economy. It's the only economy that isn't completely crashing and crumbling, James. In related news, 1 in 5 Brits think AI layoffs could trigger civil unrest, which I would say they know how to cause from all their AI wargaming of what's going to cause unrest. Now, James, what does this have to do with data centers and Dune?
Excellent question. Thank
you.
Yeah,
I thought so.
Yes. Well, for people who don't know, I just released a Solutions Watch on Butlerian Jihad when? And I hoped that that would be an intriguing title for people, but I'm sure it's off-putting for people who don't know about the Butlerian Jihad and aren't knee-deep in the Dune mythology. So I will simply tease that Solutions Watch, which I think is a pretty important one. I really hope people will give it a watch. But it's about, it takes as its basis that interesting incident we saw a few weeks ago with that crazy guy who went to Sam Altman's house with a Molotov cocktail and a manifesto. And he didn't accomplish much of anything except getting arrested. But interestingly, it turns out he refers to himself as Butlerian Jihadist. Butlerian Jihadist? What is the Butlerian? Oh, the overthrow of the thinking machines from the Dune mythology. So anyway, that's a deep dive that goes into that revolutionary spirit I was mentioning in part one of our story number one here today. I think this is an important part of that. It's a neo-Luddite movement, question mark. And of course, we have been trained by the algorithmic overlords to associate that word Luddite with dumb, stupid people who don't understand technological advancement. But in that Solutions Watch episode, I talk about Brian Merchant's new book on Blood in the Machines, which is about that, the historical, social, economic context of the Luddite movement in the early 19th century in England, and what it was, and what it accomplished, and what it didn't accomplish, and what it was actually aiming at, etc. It's actually a much more fascinating history than I'm sure any of us learned in our indoctrination camp indoctrination from our youth, and also highly relevant to this age of the big tech backlash. So I'll leave that there for now, but enough of the self-plug. But yeah, please watch that Solutions Watch. I will also plug a very good conversation I just heard between Hervoy Morich and Gabe of the Libra Solutions Network on geopolitics and empire, Libra Solutions, AI takeover, hostile cyberspace, virtual Stasi, and resisting Borg. They make a number of important points about the AI narrative and what is happening and the possibility of pushback, etc., resistance. But long story short, yes, I do think there is a revolutionary moment that is happening right now that is happening. And the question is how they spin it, or how they try to control it, or how they try to steer it, or what kind of false flag provocation they use to gin up some domestic terror incident that they'll use to crack down on it, exactly as they crack down on the Luddite movement, which is another reason we should probably know something about that history. So there's a lot to take in there, but yes, earned media is a great thing. Who cares, as long as you spell my name right, unless it's putting a target on your head. And that's kind of what this is doing right now, because people are only starting to understand how reviled the AI tech overlords are right now. And we saw that with Eric Schmidt getting up there after that lady at that graduation ceremony getting booed about AI. And he's like, hold my beer. Hey guys, AI is the way of the future and it's great. And he gets booed. What? Booing Eric Schmidt? Who could think of such a thing? Anyway, yeah, we're at the cusp of that revolutionary moment. Where do we go from here? Butlerian Jihad when? Question mark.
I mentioned reading sci-fi last week on this show and said, oh, well, the structures got destroyed after the Neo-Luddite uprisings. James, I mean, if anything has replaced Israel in the thought minds of American people who want to try and shake off the shackles, it's definitely now data centers. It is placed everywhere. And somebody sent me the link to your Dune video, and they were like, oh man, cool, Corbett's doing Dune. That wasn't on my bingo card. And then next day, the thumbnail had changed. So you swap that baby up. You got to update it. As Fender's going to try and do. Our third and final story, always the real interesting wild card on your New World Next Week episodes. Fender Guitars. Fender escalates legal campaign against S-Style Guitars, issues first cease and desist to U.S. builder. Grabbing what is possibly for the first time on this show in 17 years from GuitarWorld.com, Fender's laid down the gauntlet in its protection of the Stratocaster body shape, sending a cease and desist to a U.S. firm, ordering it to stop production of its S-styled electric guitars. As per documents obtained by YouTubers Philip McKnight and Tone Nerd, Fender sent cease and desist letters via its lawyers at Bird & Bird to a small family-run guitar company based in the U.S. called LSL Instruments. The letter is allegedly part of a number of cease and desists sent to a range of U.S.-based builders, ordering them to halt production of the possibly most iconic-looking guitar design in history. McKnight claims to have heard from at least half a dozen firms who have received such correspondence. The development comes after Fender secured a landmark ruling in Germany, in which the regional court of Dusseldorf established a legal precedent to protect the Stratocaster body design. According to Fender, the outcome of the case, launched against a Chinese manufacturer, gave the firm the legal right to protect its designs in global commerce. It established the Stratocaster as a copyrighted work of art based on original creative expression, and any firms operating or selling Stratocaster-inspired guitars in the EU were believed to be at risk of falling afoul of the ruling. However, at the time, the ramifications of the ruling were unclear. Seems like fairly unprecedented territory. And it wasn't fully understood just how Fender could and would enforce the case that came out of Dusseldorf. In a press statement, Fender warned that offering infringing products for sale into Germany or other countries of the EU is sufficient to establish liability, regardless of where a manufacturer or seller is based. And now it does seem Fender has pressed on with its legal campaign in the EU and beyond. We will include a link to one of those YouTubers. Fender declares war with guitar industry, and just a whole lawsuit overview from lawgood.com. James, my first electric guitar back in the late 90s was the Fender Squire Bullet Series. It was their own sort of in-house cheapy Chinese knockoff that looks exactly like, you know, the white pickguard on the black, just the beautiful classic kind of Fender. So this, I mean, I can speak to how iconic it is, James.
Absolutely, it is. And I think everyone who does play guitar goes through a period in which it's like, do I have a Strat? Should I get a Strat? Of course, everyone needs a Strat. And the only reason that when I was first joining Konosan that I didn't get the Strat is because Sean had a Strat. So I should go with something else. So I went with the Les Paul. But you know what? Now that Fender is going to throw its weight around to sue little manufacturers that are making Strat knockoffs that they have been doing for decades and decades now, this is not some new phenomenon, but they've got the new court ruling in Germany to help them back this up, right? So now that they're doing that, yeah, maybe I will get a Strat, but not a Fender. Maybe I'll get an LSL, and I suggest other people do as well. Support the little guy against the behemoth. For people who want to get into the weeds of this, yes, Gibson has a trademark in their bodies, the Les Paul or the Flying V, which they have to defend by defending against knockoffs in court. So that's the strategy they've taken. Fender is now apparently that it's not a trademark. It's a copyright that they have for the value of the artistic work of their S-shaped body design, which has been used by everybody for decades and decades and decades. And now they have to start trying to enforce this and putting these cease and desist letters out. Terrible brand suicide. It was nice knowing you, Fender. But anyway, you were already on the way out. It was only old fuddy-duddies like me who cared about you. Everyone who's younger than 40 wants an Ibanez or whatever the kids are playing these days. So goodbye, Fender. It was nice not knowing you.
I had a buddy, Kevin, back at the college radio station. His email was Ibanez Kev. And I feel like years past, Gibson has had some whole other problems with production and how they were made. I'm just pulling that off the top of my head. It's not coming to me right now, though, James. But it get really, really interesting stuff here that we try and bring to you on New World next week. Not just the stories that, oh, this thing happened yesterday. But again, as the saying goes, you know, smart minds talk about ideas and dummies talk about people. I run the, well, I got the P.O. box. I've reversed my order of shilling here at the end. I run the P.O. box, as Corbett mentioned, in El Rito, New Mexico, 87530. You can always find the address down in the show notes for you to support Media Monarchy or James Corbett. I also air the exclusive audio of these New World Next Week episodes before they are published anywhere in the universe. Only me and Brock and James have heard them. And now, James, I will ask you, do you have a better answer? RE, your brand new 2019 USBs on newworldnextweek.com?
No, I don't. But you know who does? Google and their AI. Yes. Thank you to Corbett Report member Vadum, who in last week's episode left this comment from Google's HP hyperplagiarizer. I'm assuming he's referring to Gemini. This is the prompt. List all titles published by James Corbett in 2019 on the Corbett Report, to which the AI replied with, in 2019, James Corbett published several major documentary episodes and interviews on the Corbett Report. Key titles released during that year include major video documentaries and episodes like The 5G Dragnet, The Secrets of Silicon Valley, The Crisis of Science, Solutions, Open Science, Something Big Has Happened, and the second annual Real Fake News Awards. So, yes, if you're ever in doubt about what any of these USBs contain, just go to Google and ask their AI. Oh, wait, no. Maybe you can just go to CorbettReport.com, and there is a way to go through the archives by year. But anyway, find those productions that you think are important and buy the USBs that correspond with them so that you have the data with you forever and cannot be taken out in the internet apocalypse.
And we usually always data lock these USBs so you can't accidentally delete all the things off, say, if you hand it to your somebody who, you know. James, I imagine 2020 is going to be a biggie USB. Cassie and I were joking earlier. Of course, the wonderful, talented Castbot had a successful merch stand at Derek's activation tour in Albuquerque. There are now more folks out there with Corbett and Monarchy gear spreading the word, and huge, giant thanks to those folks. And of course, to Castbot for doing that down in Albuquerque last week. I believe this came up in a discussion, and Cassie and I are laughing like, yeah, 2020 is probably going to be rather a biggie USB. Hell, it'll make you think, oh, God, I just want to get back to 2019 when we were wondering about Epstein not killing himself. The New World Next Week sigh. That is episode 631, my friend.
It's going to do it, but James, I don't generally do this, but I'm going to immediately go back and re-listen to this episode of New World Next Week, because I want to hear that OK Computer voice again, because I think I'm detecting a touch of Kermit the Frog in that. It sounded halfway to a Kermit impression.
You know, my impressions aren't perfect. I do a pretty good Wiggum. And I would have kept going on the line, but actually it does get to a swear in that.
Like a cat tied to a stake that's driven into frozen winter poop.
Okay, that's going to be all. I am available for voiceover work.
You know what? We're going to hear that Wiggum impression next week. We'll tease people with that.
Okay, good deal. All right. Cheers.
Take care.